With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Friday. And welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Welcome to Alive to Thrive and welcome to Friday, June 20th, just the day before summer solstice. And it's a good time of year being halfway between the beginning of the year and the end of the year to talk about our time, how we're using it, how we can better manage it, how we cannot let it stress us out. And today's topic is about time. And the mantra that many of us tell ourselves, there's not enough time, and other lies we tell ourselves. It's a book by Jill Farmer. She's a coach. She's actually been called a brilliant time optimizer and a life optimizer, maximizer. She actually had a background in journalism. She was a former Emmy Award-winning investigative TV reporter and an anchor who now uses her training in the field of life coaching and human psychology to reveal how we can get more things done in less time. That sounds good to me. I know my to-do list is always longer than my day allows. So welcome, Jill. Are you with us?
I am. It's great to be here. How are you?
Thank you for joining us. And, you know, I think we met over social media. I think we have a lot of friends in common, and I just like your whole approach to, you know, changing your mindset about how not to let time get the best of us. So how did you get interested in this topic?
Well, I always say I don't teach what I was naturally born mastering. I teach what I needed to learn most.
Right.
Like a lot of people, I spent my life just convinced that I just needed to get through whatever phase I was in or to change some external circumstance in my life. And if I could just adjust that, then I would finally have enough time to fill in the blank, whatever it was that I didn't feel like I had enough time to do in my life that I really wanted to do. And and I was really spent my life chasing these mythical, elusive windfalls or jackpots of time that I kept convincing myself would somehow show up. And of course, they never did. I'd get through that crazy phase and then, quote, have more time, and then it would just fill up with a bunch of other things as well. And it was a really exhausting way to be and to exist in the world. And I just really started taking note that important milestones were happening in my life and in my kids' lives, And I really felt like I didn't, as busy and as overwhelmed and as frantic as life felt, I didn't a lot of the time feel like I was doing much of meaning, really accomplishing anything that gave me a sense of a deeper meaning in the world. And so that's when I started to kind of look at this a little more deeply and try to figure out if there was a different way to do it.
Well, I think so many people can relate with what you're saying and will relate to your book because a lot of us, you know, I was raised in the 70s and 80s, you know, I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar, we could do anything. And we went out to set about getting careers and working long days. And I had that myth that if I just worked for myself, then I would have so much time. I wouldn't have to sit in traffic for an hour each way. That's 2 hours a day. That's a bonus 2 hours. And then when you work for yourself, you realize you're working 14 hours a day. You never leave your office because it's in your home. It's always there calling your name. So I think what you are talking about is so relevant to not only women but to everyone about this push-pull between, you know, the myth that there's some magic time later in the future. I know people, when they approach retirement, they think, oh, I'm going to have so much time when I retire. And they find often that they're busier than they were when they were working a structured set of hours. So you wrote this book, and it debuted as the top 10 bestseller in the time management category on Amazon. Congratulations for that. And it's just been out, what, less than a year?
A little over a year. And it's funny because, you know, we like to put each other in kind of boxes with descriptions, and so a lot of times people will call me a time management expert, or this book really did well in time management category. But I really believe that time is not something that we can manage. Instead, it's something that is, and that when we choose to embrace it, it really shifts the way that we experience our lives. So, like a lot of people, I was practically addicted to time management systems. I kept trying different ones and figuring out how I could fix myself by plugging into this system or that system. And what I discovered is the very foundation of the way that I thought about time was so flawed, that was what was really costing me enormous amounts of time. I mean, almost immeasurable amounts of time. And once I started with that and figuring out how to stop the subconscious ways that I was sabotaging all that time, then the embracing of it, or the managing of it, if you will, got a lot easier, because it was like, okay, I can suddenly use my whole brain as opposed to just be in that kind of hamster on the wheel mode where I'm just reacting constantly. And it's been really a transformative process. And like everybody else, I have my days where I go into cray-cray mode and I'm like, wailing and gnashing my teeth. And then I try to take a deep breath and go back to what I know to be true. And darn it if it doesn't always work.
And so many people face that point in their life about their relationship to time when they've had a near-death experience. It's something I talk a lot about on this show, because this show actually grew out of me surviving a car crash. And the last thing my mother gave me, my mother was killed in this car crash 18 years ago, the last thing she gave me in the car, she was in the passenger seat, I'm in the driver's seat, was her watch, because I had forgotten my watch that day. And I was one of these people like yourself, very addicted to managing my time and, you know, go, go, go. I lived in Washington, D.C. And after I was on my road to recovery and I thought about the watch she gave me, it made me think of the gift of time, not to take it so lightly, but also not to be living the rat race or the hamster on the wheel, as you describe it. And Eckhart Tolle actually shifted all this for me when I read The Power of Now, and he said that it's only our man-made construct of time and our attachment to time that keeps us separated from our higher power. And that just, like, blew me away. I didn't know if you've read Eckhart Tolle, if you had thoughts on The Power of Now and that comment that he made.
Yeah, I love him, and his work, both A New Earth and The Power of Now, were probably two of the first books I read on this journey of, you know, I had this inkling of or an awareness that something, no matter what external circumstance I kept creating, in my case, in your case, the trigger was a near-death experience. In me, it was when I quit my job as the journalist and TV reporter, really at what some would have considered the height of my career, you know, versus being forced out or all the things that tend to happen in that rather crazy business. And I did that in order to have enough time to be the mother and wife and human being and citizen I wanted to be. And I made that rather drastic step in order to get more time. And yet 6 months after I made that decision, I was as frenzied and overwhelmed and life was as wacky and as it ever had been. And that was like this, it was, you know, I really call it a rock bottom moment for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just was like, what if I can't, you know, make this drastic external step to get rid of this feeling of frenzy and panic and overwhelm, and it doesn't fix it, what can I do? And I had this awakening or awareness that it really needed, I needed to look inside for what was creating the situation. It wasn't outside of me in terms of circumstances or all the things that I kept or other people or, you know, any of those things that I kept blaming it on. And so around that time, I had seen a couple of interviews with Eckhart Tolle and then a couple of friends reading the books. And it was this idea that I was choosing my own suffering by the thoughts that I was thinking and living my life constantly, either projecting forward, creating sometimes scary movies about what might happen in the future, or mm-hmm. ruminating back in the past about things that had already happened that obviously I had no control over because they were done. There was no reason. And so when he introduced in The Power of Now this idea that nothing else but where we are right now is real, it was like this blanket of peace and inner calm came to me that I just, it was really a, to use Oprah's term, a big aha moment for me
mm-hmm.
to recognize that I was really creating my own suffering with my thoughts. And if I could learn to retrain my brain and get out of those and get away from the thoughts that were triggering this, me being in really fight or flight, panic, survival mode all the time, then that's where I would be able to hear that divine guidance, and that's where I could appreciate where I am so that it was much clearer about what the next steps needed to be.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I think that what you said was so important, that you reached your own rock bottom moment. And I think before anyone makes behavioral changes, you know, sometimes it's people in recovery with alcohol or drugs. Sometimes it's busy professionals like yourself or whatever it is. But we have to reach that moment of clarity where something has to change. And I love that you went inside. And because, you know, everything does start from inside first. And in your book, I just want to point this out to our listeners because it's such a practical, useful book. You don't just describe this situation or describe what happened to you. You do have a worksheet right at the very beginning, right at page 4 and 5. It's entitled My Story, ... When things first started getting hectic in my life, I was blank. And so I found myself, you know, getting a notebook and answering those questions. And it's very revealing when you start writing. It's hard to dispute things that are black and white on paper. But tell us how you've been using that template with maybe your clients or with people you've worked with in the past.
Well, when we start back with the beginning of, like, when I first started having thoughts, for a lot of people it seems to be something related to their, you know, when they were in college maybe or started their first job and started really feeling more kind of time, culturally driven time pressures. And as they begin to identify, I, you know, then I thought things would get better when X happened. but they basically are recounting their own history, and it provides evidence to show that the story, every time they thought this circumstance or this time frame is going to fix my issue, that time frame or circumstance would shift, and the issue was still there. And that is just a way to help bring, I think, some awareness or understanding, again, to that story, that it's my circumstances that are creating the frenzy versus it's my thinking that's creating the frenzy.
And then what do you say to clients that when you say it's your circumstances that are creating versus your thinking? So to people that will blame a spouse and say, because of you I have no time, or you are always getting me involved in different projects, or, you know, again, putting it outside of themselves, what's your advice when you hear a client say that?
Well, one of the quickest way, another way that we tend to trigger that fight or flight response, which I briefly referred to earlier, which is essentially the most primitive part of our brain's survival method, which gives us these warning, danger, alert signals telling us that, you know, we need to, that we're threatened in some way. And when we get those signals, the blood literally drains out of our brain and into our large muscles so that we can react quickly without thinking. The problem is when we're constantly believing false signals that are threatening us around us, we end up reacting without thinking most of the time, which is an enormously unhelpful way to be in the world, particularly when it comes to time, because it completely debilitates our ability to discern, to prioritize, to collaborate, to be efficient, focused, connected, all the things that tend to help us move through life with ease and flow and efficiency. So the point of all that is it, as it relates back to your original question, is that when we are blaming outside circumstances versus turning into the to our thinking about this, we're really diverting our attention away from the thing that can cause us to respond versus react. So, for instance, if I'm saying it's my spouse who's causing me to be this, generally it's thoughts about your spouse. My spouse has been making me have too much to do, or just plain old, I don't have enough time. That is sort of the kingpin of all thoughts that, unbeknownst to us in our little tiny, most primitive fear brain, the part of our brain that stopped developing back when we were, you know, just past toddler stage, that survival part of our brain, triggers that fight or flight response when we lose our ability to respond and instead are just only able to react without thinking. So
now, what's been your experience working with either military returning home or first responders? You know, I hear this a lot from spouses that have lived with first responders, that it's very similar with living with someone returning from the military, where they're so conditioned to be in that flight or fight mode. They've been so conditioned for survival in very tense work environments that to learn a different way of operating when they're out of that environment. Have you worked with anybody like that?
No, I haven't. The closest that I've come to is I've worked with a number of physicians who are used to being in high-stress situations. And, you know, there's emerging research all over the place in the medical community showing us that trying to have doctors make decisions in high-pressure situations, we know that that's where that increases the likelihood of mistakes or even life-threatening mistakes happening. So for instance, in some parts of the world where they're doing advanced surgeries, they've taken clocks off the wall, even in time-sensitive surgeries, because they find that the surgeons finish the surgery more quickly and more effectively when they're not looking up at the clock and thinking, oh my gosh, I'm running out of time. Just that thought triggers a brain shutdown. So when it comes to mentioned the first responders or military folks who've been used to being in that fight or flight mode a lot, the work that I think is most useful is just learning to rewire our brains a little bit And a new research that just came out today, and I think it was Psychology in Psychology Today blog, or I can't exactly remember the resource of it, but it just came out that said that new research shows that the amygdala, or that fight or flight part of the brain, shrinks in size after just a couple of weeks of semi-regular meditation, or the ability to get mindful and calm down a little bit and get in a quieter space. So for people who are in jobs or have been in situations where they really are in a survival mode, for them, I think it's really integral to become aware of what that feels like in their body, what it looks like, and be aware of where they are right now, and if they're not in a situation where they're in actual physical danger, to learn some of the techniques that I teach in the book about shifting your thinking, and or use other techniques like meditation, mindfulness practices, in order to learn how to keep, to help shrink that part of the brain that's really over-functioning and overstimulated, so that you get out of survival mode and into the place where you can thrive again.
Wow, that's good news. So there's hope for them, and that over-functioning and overstimulation, that makes so much sense, and that meditation and mindful practices, whether it's getting out in nature or doing yoga or just sitting quietly with some nice soft music, very simple solutions to start retraining the brain. Love that. Again, very practical advice. And you have a lot of scenarios in your book of different people. And I think people will be able to identify with some of them. And I like in the first story, Sandy really realizes that now is the time to make life what I wanted it to be instead of waiting for a time in the undefined future. And that's also about the permission to dream again and getting out of your comfort zone. But talk a little bit about that. I'm sure you changed the names of some of these people. But now is the time to make the best of today and taking care of yourself. So what are some tips you tell people in terms of doing that?
Well, I think it's recognizing, again, that just in its most basic form, anytime you tell yourself, I have to do something, you trigger that fight or flight response. So by recognizing that the only thing that any of us really have to do today is breathe, maybe drink some water or some hydration, and probably eat at some point, although a lot of us could even make it a day or so without eating and would be okay. All the other stuff we tell ourselves that we have to do triggers that, and it's a little bit of an oversimplification, but almost the same biochemical reaction as an animal has when it's in a cage. It is a very intense reaction. And so we begin to recognize that because we're higher functioning beings, right, than animals because of our language centers and our reasoning centers, that we get to choose. And so when we recognize, hey, I'm choosing to go to work today, I'm choosing to do these things. Now, sometimes I'm choosing a business because I'm choosing to go help take care of my ill mother. I'm choosing to pick up my kids. I'm choosing to get my tax paperwork in order. You may say, I have to do it because otherwise, you know, I'll lose my job or I'll lose my house or my mother will get really ill. Those are all really yucky consequences. And so it's true, if you choose not to do those things, the consequences may stink, but it is still a choice. Mm-hmm. And when you recognize that everything you're doing in your life is a choice, it begins to take us out of that reactionary space where we feel like we're just pinballs being bounced around in a machine. And we begin to come back into that place where our higher functioning, higher thinking part of our brain can be like, you know what, I do have some choices, and I'm prioritizing things that really line up with my values today, and the other stuff is going to get put in a parking lot for another day at a future time, or it's going to go bye-bye. Because that's not the choice I want to make for living the life that looks like I want my life to live.
I love that. Things line up with my values today. And then I choose to, and I get to, and I'm lucky. And it's funny you had said that about the receipts, because I read somewhere recently, it's like, oh, it's halfway through the year, it's a good time to get all your receipts in order. And I had been putting them in a basket in my kitchen since January. So I had 6 months of receipts in this bulging envelope. And I took time this week to just get them all sorted, put them away until tax time. But I feel really good. A, it's out of the kitchen. B, it's done. And I kept telling myself, I choose to, I get to. And then I thought, you know, I'm lucky and I'm grateful that I got to go to these meetings and have these business launches and create receipts. You know, there are a lot of people in, you know, 80% of the world lives with a lot less resources than we do in our culture. And even just thinking about, you know, water, clean water, and having access to clean water, but being in that state of gratitude and saying to yourself, I choose to and I choose to. So we're going to take a short break, just a couple of minutes for station identification and a commercial. We're going to come back with Jill Farmer, author of There's Not Enough Time and Other Lies We Tell Ourselves, and she's going to give us some tips on a to-do list makeover. So we're going to have a makeover of our to-do list and some great strategies to just tackle some small two-minute tasks, ways to do that so we don't drive ourselves nuts. Thanks so much. You're listening to Alive to Thrive. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Are you looking for good deals and a way to shop local and support our community? Well, come to the Soulard Second Saturday, an artisan market and craft fair featuring products from local farmers, artisans, crafters, and antiques. There is something for everyone. Not only are there great products, but it is also feel-good shopping, knowing that your purchases support local farmers, artisans, and small businesses. Soulard Second Saturday is held every second Saturday of the month from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Come by on June 14th. Soulard Second Saturday is located at 1919 South Broadway, just one block south of the Soulard Farmers Market. Soulard Second Saturday is a Metropolitan Community Church of Greater St. Louis Soulard Neighborhood Initiative. To learn more, visit www.mccgsl.org. We hope to see you soon in Soulard on a second Saturday.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Frazier on GGM Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Alive to Thrive. I wanted to point out on that message that was played for Second Saturday, the next one will be July 12th, and that's down on 1919 South Broadway. And then tomorrow, June 21, summer solstice, there is a garlic festival here in St. Louis. There's several around the country, but here in St. Louis, the St. Louis Garlic Fest, you can shop for all kinds of great produce. There'll be handcrafted items. My company, Butterfly and Moon Designs, will be there. There'll be live music all day. It's going from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m., and there will be a lot of kid activities as well, and it's free. It's just a fantastic fun day. And you can find more information on facebook.com/gatewaygarlicfest. They also have a website, so check that out. It's a fun family day tomorrow, June 21. So welcome back. We're talking with Jill Farmer about there's not enough time in other lives we tell ourselves, and we're going to talk a little bit about not shooting on ourselves. I love that. And I have taught other people that concept. But, Jill, tell us some ways to make over our to-do list.
Yeah, yeah, it's S-H-O-U-L-D, shoulding all over ourselves. Anybody who's been in a 12-step program has probably heard at least a version of that. But a lot of us decide what we're going to do every day, what goes on our to-do list based on shoulding all over ourselves. I should do this, I should do that, I should do this. And so we often do one of two things. We either vomit up every single thing that we need to do in order to be a worthwhile human being on this earth onto this thing that we call our to-do list, but it's really more of a diatribe or a dissertation, so that we have this huge document of stuff that at the end of every day we look at and it's black and white proof that we're inadequate and we're never going to get everything done. Conversely, other people, because they just, that feels so overwhelming, they just try to keep track of stuff in their head. So I call the people who tend to use those long form scrolls of to-do list styles overloaders, and those who try to keep track of just stuff in their brain freestylers. And neither one of those methods proves to be very useful when it comes to a to-do list. To-do lists can be really helpful in helping us stay in our lane, but we can also use them as vessels of self-abuse if we're not careful and mindful and aware of it. So one of the first things I do with a client when I'm having them do a to-do list makeover is to do that brain dump that I talked about and get everything out of your head that you possibly think you might want to get done that kind of floats around and distracts you and takes you out of that present moment onto just a working long-form to-do list. Then from there, everything that you can possibly go from that list onto a calendar with a specific section of time assigned to it. That's one of the best ways to get something out of the I should do it place and into a place where it's likely to have inspired action happen and actually get done. So, I have people all the time that will say, oh, I just wish I could exercise. And I'll say, well, what time do you put on your calendar to get some exercise in? When's the best time of day for you to make that happen? And they'll say, well, I never really have an hour. And I said, well, do you have 20 minutes? Because research shows 20 minutes of some form of moving your body is actually still beneficial. Well, yeah, I can make that happen. What time of the day is that most likely to happen? Well, it would be right when I get home from work and before I need to start making dinner, say. Okay, so you put that on your calendar, and the research shows us it's much more likely to get that done. So that's the first thing you do is get stuff off your master list onto your calendar. For the stuff that doesn't need to be time-specific or that kind of falls in between, then I have people put it onto a daily to-do list. And a daily to-do list, I like to really see no more than 5 things on it because most of the time with most of our calendars, at least half of our day or more is booked with obligations that are already at a time-specific time in our calendar. So if we have a list of 30 other things we're trying to get done, it's just not going to happen. Picking 5 that are the most important and most lined up with our values and that we would most feel a sense of accomplishment at the end of the day is a really good way to make sure you take what I call inspired action toward those things in your life that have more meaning for you. So that's kind of the most basic big makeover steps we take. And then
I love it. And you talk about the difference between overloaders and freestylers. And I think definitely I've been an overloader at times about making these giant lists. And instead of looking at how far we've come and mm-hmm. focusing on what else needs to do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the 2-minute task list is also very awesome. You know, limiting 5 tasks per day. That's really hard, and setting that timer. And I think sometimes underestimating a task, maybe saying it's a 2-minute task, but it's going to maybe take 5 or 10 minutes to do it. But the fact of setting a timer and just you know, knocking some of those things out, setting a doctor's appointment or mailing a check or whatever it is.
Right. For people who haven't seen the book, the two-minute task list is just simply taking those little things which tend to buzz around and distract you in your brain, like, oh, my gosh, I got to do that, I got to do that. And sometimes we just use them as they buzz in our brain, and we're like, oh, yeah, I got to get that done. And then we interrupt doing something in a state of flow or engagement where we're getting something more significant done. Or some of us tend to ignore all those little tasks because they are so annoying and flying around, and then they start to pile up until they become like a pretty big task in themselves of getting them all done. So every day I identify 5 tasks, in addition to my other list of 5 things, I identify 5 tasks that I can get done in 2 minutes or less, and I put them on my 2-minute task list, and I start my day by setting my timer for 10 minutes and getting those things done. And I'm pretty darn disciplined at it by now, and it doesn't feel hard to not say, oh, wait, I'm going to do this instead, or, oh, I'm going to, instead I just stick with my list. And it's stuff like, you know, writing a check to a charity that I wanted to get sent in the mail and addressing the envelope, or folding part of a pile of laundry that's been sitting there that I want to get back into somebody's room so that they can actually wear those clothes. Or, it might be unloading just the silverware in the dishwasher. It's just those little things that tend to kind of pile up, and it allows me to move through them so that they don't distract me. So that's what the 2-minute task list is about.
Oh, cool. And the rule of 5, you know, we talked about that a little bit of, you know, listing the 5 things. I mean, I started this just when I started reading your book, and, you know, I have been more productive. I feel like some of the things have been getting done and then feeling good. So when I go to bed, I'm not laying there obsessing about the day going, oh, I forgot to do this, I forgot to do this. But what kind of advice do you have for entrepreneurs that work from home and that they have that home-based office, either a separate room or, God forbid, some people have their computer in their kitchen or their dining room where it's more centrally located and it's hard to ignore it. But how do you set some boundaries around your home office?
Well, for me, one of the most important things is I also am an entrepreneur who works out of my home, so that's sort of my living practice of where I get myself off track and distracted. So I get it that it can be really challenging. And when I first started working with other entrepreneurs as clients, a lot of them were really, really, really resistant to the idea that they could only have 5 things on their to-do list because they had 30 things they needed to do in order to, you know, in order to get things done. And so one of the things I think is really clear and important with entrepreneurs goes back to some of that foundational stuff, is when we have a job at a corporation or a company or an organization, we tend to have the why or what our purpose in that job is somewhat defined for us. When we're working for ourselves, a lot of times we have kind of a general idea. Well, I'm doing this so I can bring healing to the world or bring beautiful art to the world or because I want freedom to set my own schedule. Maybe related to the purpose, but a lot of us unknowingly are trying to decide what to do every day based on what we don't want. Well, why am I doing this? Because I don't want to go work in an office. You know, every decision we make in life, why do I want to lose weight? Because I don't want to be fat anymore. And basing your why, your purpose, on something you really don't want, in my experience, is a pretty shaky foundation. So as an entrepreneur, if you can get really clear on why it is you're doing what you're doing, if it's because you don't want other people to think you look like a failure, or you don't want to, you know, you're afraid you're going to lose money, if you can shift that to, I want to do this because I'm ready to experience some abundance, or I really want to get this message out to the world, that starts to clear away some of the mind clutter and some of the spinning our wheels clutter, and then give ourselves permission to pick, based on our available time on our calendar and those 5 things on our to-do list, the most important actions that we can take that relate to that why. That's where I've seen entrepreneurs have their businesses take off versus be in that either just expensive hobby or spinning wheels state.
I see. And so talk about the this was, I thought, also very brilliant. Big projects don't belong on the to-do list. I think, you know, for a lot of us, the way I was doing it, I put everything from the two-minute task to the one-hour task to the someday I am going to, you know, literally I'm planning to go to Africa, and, you know, I'm going to raise all the money to go to Africa, you know, today. And so, you know, all these big projects are all on the same list. So talk about putting them in a folder, and how do you not forget about them if the big projects are put aside in a folder?
Yeah, because a lot of us will have things like, you know, remodel kitchen, revamp website, go to Africa, raise money to go to Africa, on our to-do list. And even when we rewrite the to-do list, we write the same darn thing over and over again, and then no action ever gets taken. So anything that requires multiple steps in order to get it completed is a big project. It's not a daily to-do list task. Big projects go in their own folder, is the easiest way for most people to organize it, or if you're an Evernote user, their own electronic folder. It's some way for you to capture information about that. And then I encourage people to sit down and create a list of ridiculously easy steps that they take in order to take action, that they can take in order to have action or momentum get rolling on those big projects. So for you, it might be to a ridiculously easy step might be to begin to ask two people who've made a similar trip what their expenses were, or to go online and research with two different airlines what the expense might be. And you begin to take ridiculously easy steps that then lead you to next steps and action, and inspired action, so that we don't just sit on those big projects under this cloud of overwhelm, but we actually take steps toward having them happen. So the steps, the individual steps toward making the big projects happen, those go on our to-do lists. And I use actually a flowchart method. I'm not a business school person, never used a flowchart in my life before I learned this technique. Now, they're one of the most integral parts of my business and the way that I do my own healing work in the world, because they help me see in front of me a series of flowing, ridiculously easy steps that can break down these onerous big projects into something that feels really inspiring. And I have a free template that I give away on my website that anybody can go get for making their own similar flowcharts to help take these big tasks and break them down. And back to, I think, the original question, which I failed to answer, how do you remember then to circle back around to that big folder, is then you put that on your calendar. So in every week, I have calendar prompts on different days for checking in my big project folder on whatever the big project is, and then taking a look at what are inspired action steps that I can take that day or that week and get them either onto my calendar or on my to-do list so that something happens versus just swirling around with it in my head. Does that answer your question?
Well, and you obviously successfully did that with a big project of writing a book and getting that published. Did you self-publish that? Or?
I did. I had a really... Okay. Great experience working with a publisher initially who I had a contract with, and ultimately, because a lot of my work is teaching and speaking, I really wanted to hold on to my content. And so she ended up sticking with me as an editor and consultant, and I was really overwhelmed by the process of self-publishing, and I just thought, oh my gosh, I can't do this. I don't have any expertise here. And once I just began to trust myself into taking small steps toward discovery and opening myself up to different resources, I discovered that in my own area where I live, there's a whole lot of people who are fantastic at helping people create ideas and who have ideas create them into books. And so I had a lot of support and resources and a network of really talented people who helped make it happen once I stopped just sitting there and being scared about all the things, reasons it was going to be so hard, And I started taking steps. And, yep, there were steps that were mistakes or things that didn't end up panning out, but that was all data for the process. And it was a really big step for me, and I think it's really helped guide the work that I'm supposed to do in the world.
So what's your next really big project?
So my next really big project is to take the ideas and concepts from the book that I teach in a variety of different ways now and develop a really terrific training program that companies can use to help shift the culture of a company from that sort of panicked, we never have enough time mode that many are finding to be a non-sustainable way to maintain a really innovative workforce, and to shift that into a place where people can think of great new ideas again, implement them, and not be so burnt out their whole life is scheming how to leave their job. Mm-hmm. So that's been a really challenging and meaningful process for me, and I'm getting really close to having our final product to begin to share with companies and hopefully have them have it spread like wildfire so that we can begin to shift the culture of the way that we work and live in this country.
And I assume that in addition to companies, you could also work with employees at nonprofit organizations.
Yep.
I find, since that's my background, so many of them are, you know, underpaid compared to their corporate counterparts, mm-hmm. and or they're doing work with clients that, you know, is very stressful, you know, indigent populations or mm-hmm. populations with mental health issues or any number of various issues that nonprofits address. Will you have a program, a version for nonprofit organizations?
Yep, and I've done some really cool work with nonprofits already because that's perhaps even more important to avoid the burnout than we see in other places because people can be more quick to burn out because they're maybe not receiving the financial compensation that peers in private companies are. And so, or in the business sector are, rather. And so, I think that's a really meaningful part of the work that I do, too, is helping to people who are doing great work in the world connect to their why and be able to continue doing that meaningful work in a way that's sustainable and not quite such a roller coaster of overexertion and then burnout.
Okay, great. And I love that on your website, I want to make sure the listeners know, it's jillfarmercoaching.com, and she's also on other social media, Twitter and LinkedIn, of course. And you can send her an email, jill@jillfarmercoaching.com. But on your website, talk a little bit about the four-class, the book and four-class recordings, that it's a virtual book club. That's cool. Talk about that.
That recording, that is something that's really, that I've really loved doing because I had people who had either, after the book immediately came out, I had people several months later saying, oh my gosh, I read the book and it created this shift for me, which I was very grateful to hear, and now I feel like I need a little tune-up. Or I had people that are like, oh, I've been wanting to read the book so badly, but I just keep putting it off. Or, the line I get a lot is I don't have time to read the book. People knowing full well the irony of saying that, but it feels true to them. And so the audio classes are a really affordable way to read the book in small chunks and then digest it and listen to, I think, some really cool discussions and from me and with some other people who did this class live with me a while ago to allow it to kind of sink in and plug it into our lives in a more practical way. Because sometimes for a lot of us, we read something, but when we listen to it, it's like, oh. Or I get into some of the, a little bit more of the background story about why I wrote what I wrote and a little bit, just I think some interesting sidebars that are beyond what actually made it into the book. So that's what those audio classes are, and I just find them really fun, and the feedback on them has been terrific. So
cool. And so in addition to your big project of your training program, what other things are you working on that you want us to know about? Do you have any upcoming speaking engagements that are public, or where can people find you in action?
I don't have any right now that are public. Everything that I've got on the books is for organizations or companies that are not open to the public, or they are sold out at this point. But I'm always looking for new opportunities to share the message with new groups. So if anybody has someplace that they think anything they've heard here would be useful, that's something that really lights me up and is a big part, I think, of my mission in the world. And then additionally, I have private clients that I love working with. I have a fairly limited number of people that I work with just based on the way I create my schedule and keep things in flow so I can continue doing the work that feels good to me. And so I have private clients. But the easiest way for people to stay connected with me and be part of my community, and it costs nothing, is when you go to my website to just sign up for my community. And you get monthly newsletters with time-related articles and support, information if I am doing something public that you can sit in on or tune in for. That's the first place that I do that. Media interviews that I do, I put links to those so that if you didn't happen to catch something that I did, you have a chance to listen to it later. So that's another way that you can stay connected just, at no cost, but in a way that hopefully if you heard anything that's useful, you can continue to get that as a resource.
Awesome. And then I love asking my author guests, what books are you reading now and what books or read recently that you would recommend?
I'm reading, I usually have one fiction and one nonfiction going.
My
current nonfiction, which I think is outstanding, particularly for entrepreneurs, is called Body of Work, Finding the Thread That Ties Your Story Together by Pam Slim. Pam wrote the book 4 years ago or so, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, called Escape from Cubicle Nation. And she's a fellow master coach that did the same training under Martha Beck that I did. And she's a great person. I think she's really terrific. And her book came out a few months ago, and I knew I'd want to savor it, so I've been taking my time really savoring that there. And I guess the other book I'm reading for fun, which is not, it's not actually fiction, it's nonfiction historical, but it's called The Boys in the Boat, and it's a historical piece about rowers at the University of Washington in, I think it's the 1930s or 40s, and it's been really fun to read so far. So.
Oh, neat. Are you a rower?
I'm not. I have a kid who is, though.
Okay. So, all right.
The closest that's thing I've ever done to rowing is kayaking.
Oh, neat. And that's a good way to relieve some stress is just getting out there and getting out in nature and doing something physical and something immersed in nature where you can't really have your phone too close by if you're rowing a boat of any sort.
No, and that's a big – I talk a lot about the need to reset and reboot and how that actually really aids your productivity. It's not something you wait until you get everything done to do, but it's something you do after you do a couple things on your list so that you can be recharged to continue to get things done. And so for me, being outside, even for just a few minutes in nature, is one of the most important reboots. Or, like now, talking on the phone, standing where I can look outside and really look at the trees and the grass and connect to that. That's a really important way that I stay plugged in to being able to be energized to continue to do the work that I do. So,
and it was probably true for you as it was for me, but I remember, I couldn't even take a 2 or 3 day vacation because I couldn't unplug. And I never thought I would go on a week's vacation or go somewhere where you didn't have cell service. And this was actually probably in the 80s when I didn't even have a cell phone. But to reset and reboot, so important. And this time of year, perfect time of year to reset, reboot. Folks can come out tomorrow to the Garlic Festival down at Carondelet Park, Holly Hills, all day, and that's one way. They can get out in their garden. There's all kinds of great summer concerts happening at the Missouri Botanical Gardens, but just getting outside. And we didn't get to talk at all about your training with Martha Beck, and I would love more information about that. We have a couple of minutes. Do you want to just give a shout out to her training and how do you recommend people check that out?
It was the single most important thing I did for shifting, getting off that hamster wheel and away from. I just felt like the life I was supposed to be living was somewhere in the distance, and I had no idea how to get there. And so for me, that training, and I know for many other people as well, even if you don't end up wanting to be an actual coach, the training process is so phenomenal at learning how to create the life that you want to live. I cannot recommend it highly enough. I went on, after I got regular training, I did master coach training, and now I actually teach some of the business building classes in the training program, and it's one of my one of my favorite things to do is to connect to the tribe of people who are on that journey of, you know, making their way to their best selves, and I think it's a really cool process.
Well, I love her material. I've been reading her articles in Oprah for a number of years. I have a couple of her books. I would love to have her on my show, so maybe you can help make the introduction, and who knows, maybe I'll end up going to her certified certification program because, yeah, and I do want to make sure people know her website is just marthabeck.com, and if you do /become a coach with hyphens, become a hyphen coach, you can see a video about her and subscribe to her list and get more information about that, but it may be the thing that changes your life, and if not, you'll get some daily inspiration and some good blog articles that will help improve your life in all areas. So thank you so much for being with us, Jill, and any closing quotes? This has been really fun, and the time went really fast, actually.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it, and the biggest thing that I remind people of is if you feel yourself in that fight-or-flight mode of frantic or hopeless overwhelm, take a deep breath and notice that you're thinking thoughts like there's not enough time. And just in the act of noticing, you bring yourself back to the present moment and you activate that part of your brain that can help you take inspired action toward doing the thing that's going to serve you or those around you better than just spinning and thinking, why me?
That's perfect. Thank you so much, Jill. You have a great summer, and I'm sure we'll stay in touch. And for those of you listening, for June, next Friday, I think we're going to not have a show. I will be in Florida at the Zonta International Convention. You can check out Zonta, ZONTA.org. It's one of the largest international women's organizations, been around almost 100 years. And there will be close to 4,000 women gathering in Orlando, Florida next week. So I'll be pretty busy there, but we will be back in July. We have Stacey Malkin from California who will be a guest talking about the GMO movement there to get GMOs out of all of our food and products and the health consequences of having them in our products. So thank you so much, and thank you, everyone, for listening to Alive to Thrive.
This one goes out to you and yours. Worldwide. I say, hey, I'll be gone today, but I'll be back on around the way. Seems like everywhere I go, the more I see, the less I know. But I know one thing, that I love you. Baby girl.
metaphysical man. But I know when the stars all align, you can.
Okay.
Bump into a person in the middle of the road. Look into the eyes and you suddenly know. Rocking in the dance hall, moving with you. Dancing in and out of in the middle of June. My mama told me don't lose you. Cause the best luck I had was you. I said, hey.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.